This is the Love Foco Show.
It's really hard when people are really upset with you to want to try and, okay, well, how are we going to do this? Or, you know, maybe. And it's like, no, at the end of the day, I'm showing up because this is what I said I wanted to do. And this is how I said I was going to lead. And so it's just like repeatedly coming back to that.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and changemakers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everyone, Jeff Faust here, your host for the Love Foco Show. Thanks for tuning in, and today you are going to love my most recent conversation with Mayor Emily, our newest mayor in Fort Collins. I'm a millennial, she's a millennial. I think you're going to love this conversation. I know I did. She talks a lot about her upbringing and journey to council member and mayor, the price and cost of leadership that sometimes I think is hidden, and what it means to continually show up to make values base and values-driven decisions. It was a great conversation, and I'm so excited to share you with it today.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for sitting down with me for the Love Foco Show. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You are the third mayor that I've had the privilege of interviewing, but the current mayor, of course, of Fort Collins. And man, I know your schedule is probably way busier than mine. And so thank you so much for sitting down and spending some time with me.
Happy to make time. Yep.
I watched your campaign from afar, and you know, the interwebs can tell me a lot about a person at this point, passions, desires, things they're hoping for our city. I totally want to talk about all that stuff. I'd love for you to just riff on our city for a while and talk about your hopes and dreams. But I want to start this conversation the way I start every conversations podcast and just kind of talk about your Fort Collins origin story. So many people are moving here. It seems like there are still natives around, but they're being diluted. And
you can find them. They're out there.
I'm definitely a transplant in from Kansas City, but I don't think I ever want to leave. But tell us about your origin story. Were you born and raised here? Like, what was that like? And and just fill us in on some of the story behind the story.
Sure. My origin story starts at Poudre Valley Hospital.
Love
where
it.
I was born, which is now UC Health.
Yes.
So no more Poudre Valley Hospital. But yeah, I was born and raised here in Fort Collins. I feel like when you're from Fort Collins, you always have to say what schools you go to. That's like the prereq.
I was like already thinking that. Like, what's your track?
Yeah. Laurel Lesher, Fort Collins High School.
Sweet.
It was great. Yeah. So, and you know, I actually grew up for a stint in what is now the city's natural resource building.
Really?
So when I was a kid, I lived there. It's on this old farm. And the city bought it, then we had to move out of it. So our city attorney now was one of her
first. They call eminent domain on that?
Or? No, they just bought it. But the city attorney, that was one of the projects she works on. So I always had to give her a hard time about buying the house that I lived in. But it was a great area. You know, I grew up next to what is now a bunch of the natural areas. At the time, it was an old sugar beet farm. And so there was a ton of sugar beet all on the grounds, and you could go play in it.
This is like, I've learned this is a big part of our agricultural history.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I did. I mean, I grew up in Iowa, moved from Kansas City, but I grew up in Iowa. And, you know, it's just corn, soybeans, hogs. And but like when we moved out here, it's just different weather. The soil is different.
Yeah.
And then I think a couple years into living here, they built the sugar beet, at least what I call the sugar beet park, you know, just right off LeMay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember like digging into that. I was like, why is this an icon? And then I got lost in a trail of history and research and all kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, there was mounds of sugar beet sugar.
Really?
And you could, and it was like white and you just went and played in it. And like,
that's unreal.
I mean, that was like a thing over by where I lived. And so, yeah, there is a long history with that. And I had the opportunity, I lived next to the bike path and it wasn't the natural at the time. Now it is. But I moved around a lot in Fort Collins, and you know, that was like a big part of my story and my campaign was talking about affordability, because my story in Fort Collins was growing up pretty low income and relying on Fort Collins and residents and how there was like such a good community to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I graduated from high school, I didn't go to college right away. I went and worked in Steamboat as a ski bum for a few winters.
That feels very Colorado.
It was very Colorado. Yeah. Yeah. I lived in Alaska for a summer.
Yeah.
Working in Denali, which is a town of 3 hotels.
Yeah.
And then I lived in Seattle, and I ended up moving back and graduating from CSU.
Okay.
And then I moved to Oregon to get a master's in public health.
Okay.
Lived out there for a while. And then I came back. I have 5 sisters, 5 of us, all 6 of us were
all
living
around here?
Outside of Colorado, and all of us moved back.
It yeah. has a way
it does.
Of bringing you back.
Now, they're all traders. They live in non-Fort Collins. So they live okay. in Denver, Buena Vista, Breckenridge, and Aurora. So, but now we're all back in the state. So I moved around back around that time. And I just started working for nonprofits. I worked for Volunteers of America. I worked in senior nutrition programs and did a lot of like making sure seniors had access to healthy lunches and meals that were homebound. Then I worked at the Family Center, La Familia, and I did a lot of community organizing with mobile home parks. And then that's really how I got into local government and ran for city council. So now I always think I've been back for like 4 years, and I think it's been 12 years now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. yeah.
Well, and it's funny because COVID happened in there somewhere. So like everybody's like equally
time. That's a mystery.
Time.
Yeah. Those, like, those 3 years
changed
got lost.
All of the years.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing that. I find myself getting curious about a number of things that you said. I'd love to talk about your education journey a little bit, but before mm-hmm. we do that, talk to me a little bit about growing up and what I think you said kind of a more of a low income area mm-hmm. or family setting. That's interesting because I think when people, especially outsiders, like drive into Fort Collins or they spend the week here, they just think, man, this place is killer. It's so nice. Mm-hmm. Everything is nice. The amenities are nice. But that's not the full picture of Fort Collins. I mean, there are all kinds of people who are living paycheck to paycheck, who are struggling to make ends meet. Fill in that story a little bit for me and just kind of what types of things you experienced. How, when you say you relied on the city of Fort Collins, what does mm-hmm. that mean? And then maybe how did that shape the leader that you are today? Because I find that a lot of those stories from our childhood or upbringing, they have a way of leaving an imprint on us that kind of starts to just work its way out in our adult life as well. So could you fill in the gaps on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, we grew up low income. And so for us, we bounced around housing a lot, very housing insecure. Sometimes just like staying at a family friend's house for the summer, not having a home of our own. You know, and when I say Fort Collins raised me, I mean, yes, we relied on like services, whether it be the food bank or other things to make sure we had enough food and housing, but also just like the community. My mom started this, she put an ad in the Coloradoan that was called like the Babysitters Club. And what they did was, it was a group of moms who had kids and they just took turns cooking dinner for like one night. So you would take like Monday and I take Tuesday and you take Wednesday. And then you'd just go drop the food off. So you're like only having to cook one night, right? Yeah. And some of those people and those moms and kids that were in that club, I'm still friends with today. They're yeah. my mom's best friends. But by putting an ad in the Coloradoan, like it was like they need help, she needed help, and it was this community that came together.
Yeah.
And then when it came up that we needed like a place to stay, we had options and we had other people we could rely on. And so it's like, yeah, the organizations fill those gaps, but the community that I grew up and still have today is largely based on helping each other raise families together.
I love that. I mean, there's just a sense of ingenuity. And I think like my mom was a single mom for a number of years, and the stories that she tells about like what kind of grit that takes, mm-hmm. what kind of outside the box thinking it takes, definitely the reliance on others, but also sometimes the poverty of relationships. Mm-hmm. I think my mom talks about that a lot of like, gosh, she's just grinding her 9 to 5, sometimes her 9 to 9, and then trying to figure out what to do with us kids on the tail end of that. But it really is that community aspect makes a huge difference. I'm curious, jumping ahead a little bit, and then I want mm-hmm. to get back to education too, but how do you continue to create space for that in like a growing city? Because I think it's easy. I mean, maybe anyway, I'm not a mayor. You'll have to tell me, mm-hmm. but like in a town of 20 or 30,000, be like, this is our culture. This is our identity. This is who we are. It almost feels easier to maintain that when the numbers are smaller. when the city expands, not just geographically, but also numerically and all, like, how do you maintain culture in that growing atmosphere? It has to be a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because, as you pointed out earlier, Fort Collins has great amenities. We have nice streets, we have great parks, we have natural areas, right? The city is beautiful, you know. I think sometimes you forget until you go to another city and you're like, oh, wow, Fort Collins does have great municipal services. And I think part of the thing is as we are becoming more and more unaffordable, which is a lot of people talk about how difficult it is to live here and how they just can't make ends meet. I think what happens is that the people who are moving in are more affluent, and that culture and that community aspect change in a different way. Now, I think probably later we'll talk about like what I see as mayor and what I want to do. But part of that is like the affordability piece is so important to me. One, because I grew up in it and I know that there are many residents that experience these insecurities. And two, it's because, you know, when we lose those people, we're losing part of that community and the identity that made Fort Collins so great. And cities change. We're going to change no matter what. It's thinking about, well, how do we want to change and who do we want to become? I want to live in Fort Collins that has a wide range of incomes and people, because that's where community comes from and that's where better thinking comes from and better relationships and dialogue come from. And so I think it's not so much about the number of people necessarily. I think it's about who's moving here and who can afford to live here is going to shape who our community is.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because even like going way back now, yeah, before I was here, although you experienced the sugar beet craze, but like the farming community, mm-hmm. inherent in the farming community is one of reliance. Like we're in this together, I'll lean on you, you'll lean on me. My grandparents were both farmers, and if one of them was gone, like their neighbor would come and take care of their agriculture, whatever it was, you know, their animals. And I have to think that the more affluent you are, the less you have a need to rely on one another. You can either pay for things to be done or it's just not that same kind of like our arms are locked together out of survival. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting thing to consider, especially as you drive around the city and you know, with the affordability that so many people are one financial emergency away from really hard decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing to create space for that community is going to be super important.
Well, I think it's what made Fort Collins identity. I mean, talking about like our ag heritage here in Fort Collins, and let's carry that through. We've typically been a blue collar town. And, you know, I think it's just, there's something about Fort Collins that really has continued that. But, you know, now we're talking about that identity changing and what we want that identity to be. And we're getting more away from our ag background just because of advances and technology and also more things being grown on the east side of the state. You know, it's like, well, what does Fort Collins want to become? If we're not going to have an ag identity, what is our identity going to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we're, you know, yeah, I'm just thinking like, we need the CSU guys. We need to get them to wear that orange more often.
Yeah.
And go to New Belgium and drink that Aggie beer more often.
Well, I mean, CSU is still an ag school, you know.
Big time.
And we have huge ag programs. It's just, what do we do with that now?
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah, super interesting. Okay, so let's get back into just kind of, you know, childhood up through education. You said Laurel, Lesher,
mm-hmm.
and then, what did you
Fort
say?
Collins High
Fort Collins High.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a gap year or exploratory year, yep. or, you know, it probably meant different
or
things
maybe a
in
few.
Different months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Denali sounds incredible, by mm-hmm. the way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those times in our lives shape us in really unique ways. I'm curious that time, that early adulthood, lifetime for you, skiing, going to Alaska. What are some of the things that you felt like drew you back here? Like maybe things you remembered, things you needed to let go of, or mm-hmm. things that you began to cherish more once you had some of that distance. What was like happening in your heart and in your mind during those years? That's a very personal question.
No, I think back to like 20, 21 year old Emily.
Yeah.
You know, I actually went to Fort Lewis for my first year of college. And my younger sister and I were freshmen at the same time. And my, you know, Fort Lewis, you start off with a class of 900 and by first semester it's 300. Oh. And, you know, I love my sister, but you know, we are very different. I am more of an introvert, more studious. She is very outgoing. And it was rather difficult to be at a college in a small class with her. And I was fine. I didn't need to stay at Fort Lewis. So she ended up staying and graduating from Fort Lewis. And I came up to CSU to finish my studies. And I think, you know, I love Colorado. I've moved away numerous times and I always come back. I think there's something that I just so heartily identify with Colorado. And so when I decided to come back to CSU, it was a natural fit. Obviously, I left again. But I think it's really, you know, it's challenging growing up in this town. And it's a great town and you want to like move away, but then you always want to come back. But it's so, as you said, it's so important to get out and experience other things. And I didn't want to be a person who just stayed in their hometown. And so I've tried to leave multiple times, but keep ending up in my hometown. And I think that says something about Fort Collins.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting because so I'm married and I have three kids. Mm-hmm. They're middle school at Tidmouth Middle High. And then I have one still in elementary school as well. We moved from Kansas City, which was a much more diverse metropolitan in a lot of different ways, socioeconomically, but also just racially and ethnically. And we've moved here and there's still diversity. I think the narrative when I moved here was there's not as much diversity. Mm-hmm. And the longer I lived here, the more I realized you just have to be like really good at learning your city and meeting people mm-hmm. and getting out. But my wife and I have had this conversation many times, like it's still like incredible. And we are going to pay money to make our kids leave. Like, I don't know what that's going to look like yet. They're too young. I don't have to make all those decisions yet. But we're like stashing money away now so that if they want to do a gap year, if they want to do Peace Corps, if they want to go on a mission trip, they want to, you know, like get educated somewhere else. Like, we are ready to pony up for that. Mm-hmm. Because I think like we do want worldview to be shaped by the world, not just by one local community. And then kind of the hope is like, yeah, they'll remember how amazing it is and maybe come back to Larimer County.
Probably.
So you said you spent some time in Oregon. Mm-hmm. What did you study there? And what was that time of your life like?
Well, I went to Portland State University to study public health. And so I lived in Oregon for a few years and I moved to California for a year. I ran this farm to school program where I take kids on field trips on farms. And that was during that time when everyone was trying to get fresh foods into schools.
Yes.
So I did a lot of that. And then I moved back to Oregon and I became a bread baker, as you do in Portland. Yeah.
That feels very Portland-ish.
It was a very sourdough, wood fire, house milled, local organic grains.
Yes.
You have to have all the things in there.
Love it.
So I didn't do anything with my public health degree for a while and just was a bread baker.
Yeah.
For a few years. And it was great. I mean, I love public health.
Well, like, how did you get into that? I mean, were you just like sipping coffee one day and you like had the most amazing piece of toast and you're like, I have to, like, how do you jump in to making sourdough and like making a living off of it?
Well, I came back from California and I was just kind of like, didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I was new in the field of public health. So it was kind of hard to get hired, but I had worked in the restaurant industry for, you know, 10 or 12 years. So I was working at a coffee shop and they had a bakery and, you know, one day I was just like, can I do that?
Yeah.
And so then, I don't know, I started baking and then I became the head baker. And
now the question is, have you kept that a lot? Like, do you still make sourdough for yourself today?
Yeah, I do.
You have like the little, I mean, cause my wife did this for a while. I'm fascinated. Uh-huh. That jar breathes.
It is.
And she like,
living organism.
She feeds it.
And it's like a nano.
It's like, I have to go and like, I have to feed, you know. Yeah. Uh-huh. What is happening? What has happened to our kitchen? You know,
exactly.
But it's amazing.
Yeah. It's like the new dog, you know, your life. I got to go home and feed the starter.
Yeah. Have you split that starter off and shared it with others? Or is this just an Emily recipe?
You know, it's kind of like
a recipe,
a misunderstanding about how sourdough works. Where like really just sharing starters that somebody doesn't have to do the work of making a starter.
Yeah.
But there's nothing special. Like if you get a starter from
San Francisco,
it's just
fermented more. And
it's just what's in your air makes the starter. So, yeah.
Oh, I love it. Well, that's a fun fact for everyone listen to about, you know, Mayor Emily. She's a sourdough starter and baker.
Yeah.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's just fast forward just a little bit in the journey. Cause you're mayor now.
Yeah.
First millennial mayor, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Just because the nature of how generations work. And you know, before you were elected mayor, you were on the council, you sat in the chair. And so How did you go from Baker Emily to like local government, serving the city, leading the charge? What was that journey like, and how do you find yourself where you're at today?
I think I had a very atypical journey where I did not ever work on a campaign, volunteer. I had never been involved in local politics at all, any politics at all.
Yep.
But when I was working at the Family Center, I worked with Mobile Home Park residents on like, how do they want to improve their quality of life? And they really wanted to focus on preservation and protection of mobile home parks, because redevelopment of mobile home parks was like really big possibility. And then when you're living in a mobile home, there's nowhere really to move your home.
Yeah.
And so you just lose your investment and they can't afford to live anywhere else. And mobile homes are like such lovely communities that there are these like little mini cities and neighborhoods, and people love living there and they know their neighbors. And so they're really concerned about it. So my job was basically to help them explore policy level options on how do you preserve and protect mobile home parks. And so what I did was I worked with elected leaders, so at the city and county and PSD, and then I connected them to residents who probably came from somewhere where interacting with your local government or any government was dangerous, who probably language wasn't English, their first language. And what I did was just like work with them on how to talk with elected officials and talked with elected officials on how to work with people who come from a different country. And it was really awesome. I learned so much.
Yeah.
You know, we had these panels where it would just be someone from the city and county and school board, and community members could ask questions and somebody could answer it. Because often someone's like, hey, what about this? And you're like, oh, that's not me. That's someone else. And then you have to go find that other person.
Yeah.
But just having everyone there, it was awesome. It was like everyone could learn about who does what and what the issues were. And then elected leaders could really hear from community members directly about what their issues were. And so that's how I kind of got involved with knowing elected leaders. And at the time, you know, the city kept talking about how we're world-class city. That used to be Fort Collins' tagline.
Yeah.
And it just irritated me so much. I think because, I mean, I worked with residents who did not think the city was world-class. They did not get world-class
treatment.
That's a nice
tagline, but how is that impacting my life?
They don't have world-class service. Yeah. They don't have world-class treatment, you know, and it just, it bothered me so much. And, you know, at the time council was mainly retired men. There was one woman on council, and I just went to City Hall and filed paper to run for city council.
And how, like, when was this?
2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now there's amazed at how many strong female leaders are in our city.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, tons and tons and tons.
Yeah. I mean, I was fortunate to be elected to the first majority female council we've had. And first millennial to be elected. I was 34 when I got elected. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knocked like a lot of, I think I knocked 1500 doors.
That's a very honest disclosure.
I did. Yeah. I just knew that there was not representation for people like me up there, and that decisions and what council was talking about was not the things I was caring about, which was things like affordability and housing and transit, being able to stay in Fort Collins. And these were things council wasn't really talking about at the time.
I'm so moved by that, because I think people find their way in so many different avenues. You know, sometimes it's relationships. Sometimes it's you know just the culture they've been in. They've always seen, they've always been around doctors and lawyers. They're going to be a doctor and lawyer. It's just like kind of the part of the culture, the family system, even. But I hear passion from your drive and even some discontentment of like, hey, like there is a disconnect from the people that I'm trying to demonstrate hospitality to, trying to be a liaison from them to the city and back and forth. And I'm not seeing all these decisions with like the entire community in mind.
Yep.
I love that. I love that. Cause I do think that creates a different kind of motivation, a different kind of drive and passion to see change. And that's exciting.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm excited listening. Well, to you say that.
People always ask me, why did you run? I was like, I just had a minor fluke that day where I was like, this is how I'm going to solve this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, I came on a council at that time. There was no onboarding for council. You just like showed up.
You show up.
You got elected. I think 2 weeks later, you're sworn in. And it was like a very like contentious, who's going to be mayor pro tem. Yeah. And it was like, I didn't know how to make motions. I didn't know how to be on the deck, like nothing, right? And so there's no training for it. And
Yeah.
Just throw right in.
All the rules.
Oh, yeah.
About making a motion. Oh, who's going to second? Are we vote? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've messed that up plenty of times myself on boards that I've been on and things. And you kind of stumble your way forward. So served there for 5-6 years.
Well, I had to get reelected.
Tell us a little bit about, because I'm not sure everybody knows. I mean, I think I'm learning right now. So you get elected to city council. Full disclosure, I mean, you're a millennial, so maybe you'll know this reference. My early exposure to how council works was from Leslie Knope on Parks and Rec.
Yes.
So,
yes. Number one.
So, teach me a little bit about that. So when you get elected, how long does that seat last?
If you're a city council member, 4 years.
Okay. And mayor's two, right?
Mayor's 2 years. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Council, you can serve 2 consecutive terms. And mayor, you can serve 3 consecutive terms.
Okay.
So consecutive is the key part, because you can take a break and come back if you want, which some members have taken a break and come back.
Yes. When you got elected, or election day then, like Leslie Knope, did you like rent out a giant facility and throw a party?
No.
You'll have to go back and watch the episode. I don't know if you're a big Parks and Rec, but I was just watching this. I can't remember what season. It was season 4 or season 5, whatever. She runs. She gets elected, or does she? And then there's the recount. She, you know.
Yep.
And I looked at the room where she was celebrating in some small town in Indiana. I was like, there's no way a city council member is renting this whole facility and doing like a ball drop and open bar and all this stuff for like this one chair. But sure enough, they got to make TV though. They got to make TV.
I love it. Yeah. No, that is not what happened. No. So I was elected in 2019, and that's when Wade Troxel was mayor, and he served 2 years, and then Jenny Arndt came on as mayor. And so when she came on, every 2 years, you also elect a new mayor pro tem. And so mayor pro tem is like a fancy way of saying vice mayor, where you kind of have two roles. One is to fill in with the mayor when she's out of town or they're out of town. And the other is, like, you're a representative of council, because you're elected by council. So you're elected by council to kind of represent them. The mayor represents the city. Mayor pro tem represents council.
Yep.
And so every leadership meeting, we're there together. And Jenny's representing the city, and I'm here saying this is what council wants. Things like scheduling, what's on the calendar, what are we talking about, things like that. So I was selected as mayor pro tem in 2021.
Okay.
And then during that time, we moved the election from April
to
November.
That's good job training. I mean, that's a lot of that's a lot of like behind the scenes exposure.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. To what the mayor does and what it's like. Yeah. So we moved the election from April to November because we wanted to increase voter turnout in municipal elections.
Yeah.
So that extended everyone's term for 7 months.
Okay.
And then I was reelected again in 2023 and reelected as mayor pro tem again in 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then 2 years later, I ran for mayor.
Yeah. So what happened there? Because what's interesting is sometimes, not always, but sometimes people get a picture of like what this could be. And they're like, well, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I've seen too much or I've seen what this really is. It's no longer an idealized version of what I thought this could be. But like I've actually seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of people would say, no, thanks.
Yeah.
And you said, no, I'll take like another step in. So what was still the same kind of discontentedness of like, I want to see this role represent the whole city, or like, how were things shifting for you that made you think, no, I'm going to throw my name in the ring for this?
Good question. I thought about it a lot because it's very, I have to have a full-time job when I'm mayor. So it's a lot of work. And thinking about my personal life and what I want to do, it's not the easiest thing to get a job after being mayor.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to think about like,
and
what
again,
does this
I'm
look
not
like?
Sure all of our listeners know that. So you just said you have a full-time job.
Yeah.
And this is not that 20,000, you know, member city. This is a real city.
Yeah.
Over 100,000 people. We've got a big school district, a lot of major employers, a lot of challenges, affordability. I mean, real issues that you're trying to solve. And you're doing that while you have a full-time job.
Yeah.
And this is probably one or two jobs on top of a very public figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hard.
It is. I've worked.
You go to Steamboat and ski still?
No. I do run a lot. But other than that. No, I switched from skiing to running. But, I think, I mean, I've worked the entire time I've been on council. And currently, this new council is the first time we've had a primarily working council. Everyone, I think, except for one person, has full-time jobs. Or at least part-time jobs.
Yeah.
usually that's not the case, you know, because used to when I first got on council, I made $10,000 a year. And, you know, so that's why a lot of retired people were running and being on city council because they could, you know, it made sense.
Your average person already, like, there's no way that you could do that.
No. So then the residents voted to increase council pay.
Yep.
And it's based on the area median income. So now as mayor, I make 70% of area median income, which is, I don't know, $65,000.
Yeah.
But that's not enough.
Still really tough.
I could qualify for affordable housing.
Yeah.
You know, so I do have a full-time job. Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I love interviews like this and I love learning more about our city. And I want interviews like this to spread around because it really is a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And people think like, oh, mayor, like, oh man, like, no, I don't think they get it. They don't get it. It is servant leadership. Like, there is a cost to leading, and it very rarely pays for itself financially. Like, there is a big cost to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want, I mean, thank you paying that price. You know, I mean, that it is not, it's something that likely weighs on you, I would imagine, and pulls you in a lot of different directions. And so, yeah, I just appreciate that.
Yeah, I think, you know, because I want to do a good job as being mayor, and every mayor has to define what that looks like for them. But you want to put the time and the effort and the respect into the position. And I still have to pay my mortgage.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is like working through this, and it's what does Fort Collins want from its elected leadership, and how do they want to be represented? I think is a question we're going to talk about as we grow, as our city grows, because the expectation of elected leadership continues to grow, and the, like, what we do and what our responsibility is and what impact we can have continues to grow, which is good. But also we have to remember that these are volunteer positions and that these have now some pay, but at the end of the day, like, people have to work usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so I can't be at every single event.
Yep.
Cause I'm at my day job.
Oh, it's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, but people tie so much to the mayor showing up, right? And they want you to be there. And I understand, and I want to be there. They want their council member to show up, right? Yeah. And it's so important to see, there's so much tied to your elected official showing up, and it means something, 100% true. And also, like, how do we work with that when we also want council members who represent us up on the dais to be there? That's, like, such a trade-off that we're going to have to work through as we move forward.
Well, not only if you show up, mm-hmm. but also how you show up,
because
mm-hmm. it's a public figure.
Yeah.
And so not everyone knows, like, maybe you've had like a super hard week at work or multiple weeks at work, mm-hmm. and it's already really hard for you to go to the event. And if you don't meet their expectations, I mean, it's just like the way that human nature works.
Yep.
And, you know, you could show up just having a bummer of a day. And if that leaks out in body language or person about whatever it is, people can still be disappointed. I mean,
oh yeah,
this is like, welcome to leadership, right? Like, this is part of the gig. But hopefully empathy for your office and your position grows and people can begin to understand that. But yeah, I just think it's a good thing to share. Like, this is a full-time job, but you have another full-time job.
I do. Yes. I'm also a huge introvert. And so,
yeah.
You know, people expect mayors to be gregarious and show up and know everyone and talk to everyone.
Yeah.
And that's not my style.
Yeah.
I do so much better in small groups. Large events are not my jam. Like, I will go. But when people expect the mayor to show up and be this person, that's not me, right? I'm a big introvert. And so, you know, I think it's really working and building those relationships so that people know, like, who you are and what you're for. So they're not relying on your public persona. Right. Because at the end of the day, when I go home, that persona comes off, and it's hard living in those two different lives sometimes. And, you know, I think the more you can be yourself and the more authentic you can be, the more people identify with.
That's huge. And I feel like that's something our generation has always loved mm-hmm. and championed. But the integration of public and private self mm-hmm. and the more that those can be congruent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what it saves you energy.
Mm-hmm.
You're not always happy, you know. But I think it's, you know, authenticity is contagious, and I think it's attractive. Like, people want to, they want to lean into that.
Mm-hmm.
They want to experience that more and more. So,
well, that's what I leaned into with my mayoral campaign, you know, and like, what I remember when I was thinking about running, and my partner was like, you cannot run your campaign the same way you did last time, because campaigns are so hard, right? And they put so much stress on somebody, and you have to, like, have to, in quotations, do all these things if you want to win. And he was like, I want you to run your campaign in the way you want to run your campaign. And that's what I did. I just really leaned into being my awkward, authentic self, primarily through social media, and just talking about issues that were important to me, but in a way that, like, the way I dressed, the way I presented, the way I showed up was, like, authentically who I was. And I think that people really liked that or identified with it. And so I think that also has set me up in a way where I can come into this office and not pretend like I have to be someone else that I presented during the campaign, that I can just walk into the office and be authentically me because that's what people voted for.
Yeah. I'm curious, just switching gears a little bit off of your particular campaign and being elected to just the larger election as a whole. In our city, this I'm just going to pop quiz you, so it's okay if you can just pass. You can just say pass. Do you have any, like a frame of reference for how many people voted in the election?
This year, I think we're up to 48%.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that feels, I mean, on one hand, like, usually it's below 50, but, like, also for a city mayoral, like, that feels high.
Yeah, off
compared
here.
To
yeah.
like probably a lot of other cities. Is that right to assume that? Or
I think when I first ran, it was like 32%. It's okay. 30 like something percent. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little more ownership, a little more interest, and sort of trending in the right direction.
Yeah. We also had some big things on the ballot that people are really passionate about.
Yeah.
Which helps drives voter turnout. Mm-hmm. Moving it to November drives voter turnout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just because they're used to voting in the fall?
Yeah. Because when you get one in April, then it's November, people are always like,
yeah, they get the thing in the mail. They're like, oh my gosh, I gotta read
exactly
20 statutes to figure out what I'm gonna
get. Yes.
I get that. Oh, sweet. Well, that was a long way to get us to where I really appreciate you sharing that part of your story with me. I'm curious. I found myself thinking about this question. Maybe it's a weird way to pose this question, which is fine. You can reword it in your own mind. But if you were to think about, like, the DNA or, like, the soul of our city, or, like, the nature of who we are, how would you begin to describe that? And what about that do you really love? Like, what have you fallen in love with when it comes to kind of the soul and the DNA of our city?
Well, I think when I think about Fort Collins, you know, yes, we have great amenities. Our natural areas was very forward thinking. We have beautiful parks. We have all these things, right? But to me, what I love about Fort Collins is the people that make up Fort Collins, which is why I'm, like, so passionate about making sure that people can afford to live here. Because, like, the people that Fort Collins attracts who are able to live here, you know, and want to live here, it just, to me, makes Fort Collins what it is. And so I think the DNA of Fort Collins is people who come here and say, this is the town I want to be in. And I think since I've grown up here, you know, for a long time, it was like that kind of fed on each other, and, like, more people identified with Fort Collins, and that, like, grew this, like, community that I identify with as Fort Collins. However, as we become more and more affordable, that to me is, like, what we're losing, that I see less of. And I think it's because we're funneling who can stay and who can live here. And so, I mean, there are so many things about the amenities of Fort Collins that I love in the city of Fort Collins, especially being, like, a big runner and a big outdoors person, a big biker.
Well, it's like you said,
town.
You go to another city.
Yeah.
I mean, I went back to visit my family. They're still in the Midwest. And they either don't have bike lanes or you will still get run over if you are in one because they're, like, 12 inches wide.
Yeah.
Like, who can bike? Our bike lanes here they're first class.
They are.
You can kick your feet back and really enjoy. I mean,
platinum level.
They are.
Platinum level serious. Bike community.
You are a group one boarding at that point.
Yes.
But you're right. Those amenities, I mean, they're only going to mean so much to a certain section of people if we can't afford to leave. So let's talk about affordability a little bit. I would love to talk about this. I'm an employer. It is really hard. To the phrase that I learned when I did leadership for Collins was talent acquisition. Mm-hmm. Like, finding people from outside and bringing it. This is a challenge, especially if you're not moving from a coast where you just have a bunch of, you know, like, net worth wrapped up in a house or an asset. But coming from the Midwest to the Front Range was challenging. How do you look at that? Not only in short term, but this city will outlive your position as mayor. And so how do you navigate some short-term goals around affordability, but also, like, with the long-term kind of game in mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, and I'm very fortunate that the other council members also feel affordability is the number one issue in Fort Collins. We had our first round of our priority setting last weekend, and we'll have our second round this Saturday. And I don't think I've ever been part of a council that was so concentrated and focused and dedicated to talking about affordability. And affordability from the part that, yes, we need more housing, and we need more housing that's affordable to more people, but we also need to make it affordable for businesses to open and locate and stay here. Mm-hmm. And we also need to attract jobs, that we do not have enough jobs that pay a livable wage to stay in Fort Collins. And the amount of people that are commuting into our city is extremely high. You know, I think we're almost at, 48,000 people commute into Fort Collins.
Yeah. I didn't know that. 48,000.
Yes.
Commuting in. I mean, there was always talk about like housing prices mm-hmm. on a trajectory towards like a Boulder type mm-hmm. of experience. I have to imagine those numbers are maybe not quite to Boulder, but you know, there's got to be more people that commute into Boulder, can't afford their drive home somewhere else. But I have to imagine that's on pace to follow that too, if we don't interrupt that somehow.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is when people, if we don't want growth in Fort Collins, it just won't happen within our city limit, but it's going to happen on the other side of I-25. Yeah. And then those people are going to drive in.
It's just going to go somewhere else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have the tax leakage out to those communities. Yep. And so, and then, you know, when we talk about our environmental goals, vehicles, miles traveled, and building emissions are the top two things that are contributing to our greenhouse gases. So if we really want to focus on our climate goals, we have got to reduce vehicle miles traveled. And that is a big part of people commuting it. So, you know, with affordability, we just have to be able to make some progress in this area where we are saying we actually do really want people who work in our community to live in our community. And from a public health perspective, you know, when you have police officers and teachers that live in your community, you have better safety outcomes, you have better education outcomes, you know, you have more people that are invested in your community and are giving back. Because if you think about, oh, if I drive into Fort Collins and I work here, well, you're not volunteering here. You're not spending your time here. You're going to your other town that you live
in. There's less ownership, less investment in the fabric of the community.
So you lose community. You're decreasing your education outcomes, your safety outcomes. If you're a police officer and you drive in, work in Fort Collins, where is your heart tied to?
Yeah.
You know, it's not saying you're not dedicated to serving Fort Collins, but you have better outcomes when you live there.
Well, and
there.
It's good for the name. I mean, you know, I interviewed Chief a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about how it's nice for me and my mm-hmm. family to like see the police officer car right down the street. Like I know that guy lives there.
Right.
He doesn't know me yet, but if I run into a pinch, I'm going to like knock on that guy's door.
Yeah.
It does add some kind of even safety, ownership, investment in the community. Mm-hmm. But you're right. When some of our civil servants can't live here, that's tragic. This is my thing with like teachers. Like when teachers can't afford to live in the cities where they teach, I think teachers get into the profession because they just genuinely care and they want to give back. But you want those people in your city.
Yeah.
You know, not just in your schools, but in your city.
Oh, 100%. And I think when, you know, we think about long-term affordability, like why long-term, you know, yes, we want to address immediate right now. The issue is it just takes so long to change the ship of where we're going. Oh. And, you know, councils, like, what are we going to do quickly? What are we going to do that can help us set us on the right trajectory? Because, you know, when we think about this long term, this is, you know, we're going to see things like we have a decrease in sales tax for the city of Fort Collins, which means we cut $15 million from the budget mid-year. We're going to have to cut an additional $15 million this year. So with sales tax decreasing, how are we going to pay for the nice amenities in Fort Collins? That's one thing. And when you have sales tax leakage, which is, you know, it's not staying in the community, that's being kind of out, that's a problem for providing municipal services. I think the other thing is, so one, we're going to have decrease in municipal services if we don't address people being able to live here. The second is what PSD is talking about. We're talking about school closures.
Just got that email. Just
500 kids less again this
year.
That's
real.
That's real. And those schools are community hubs for people. They're just not where kids go to learn. They are community hubs. And when we close schools in neighborhoods, I mean, that has a detrimental effect on the neighborhood because now you have this building that was where people were coming together, and now what's going to happen to it? How do we have this? Where are kids going to go? Where are communities going to gather? What are families? I mean, schools are just so much more than teaching. And so when you think about the long-term impact of this, this is what not being affordable means. And these are just two examples of what can happen. And then, you know, we also talk about talent. So people being able to hire and come move here. City of Fort Collins has issues hiring people because it's too expensive for entry-level jobs. We have other employers that are like, we offer jobs and people can't afford to live in the city, you know, so they're not getting people.
Yeah.
So it just has this effect, this ripple effect, where it's just going to keep going, which is why for the health of our city, we have to be able to address affordability.
I mean, this is why we thank our public servants, because these are really complex problems. They're mm-hmm. hard to solve. And when you look at the landscape of our city, where do you begin with that? There's only so much green space left.
Mm-hmm.
So do you, and if you throw in transportation in there too, I mean, like, the more we spread out, the harder it is to do public transit in a really efficient and effective way. Do you talk about building up?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, I mean, how are you beginning to think about solutions to some of this?
So I think for the building side of things, the greenfield development is really where we're going to see things happen. And that's mainly in the northeast part of town.
Mm-hmm.
They have a different water district, which makes it extremely difficult and more expensive to build out there. So we have to think about creative solutions, because the city of Fort Collins water utility isn't out there. And so that's a barrier just to for affordability. And then when you think about infill, this is really where we can make more of an impact. However, in Fort Collins, there's not agreement about infill and density. And so that's like a really hard community conversation. We've been through it a couple times, and you know, it's really thinking about, well, what do we want as Fort Collins? Because we're going to change either way.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to stay the same. Even if we never let anyone else in Fort Collins, Fort Collins will change. It's just, what do we want it to change into? For me, infill development is something we're going to have to do if we want to talk about affordability. And is it that everything becomes cheaper? Not necessarily. But the thing is we can change the trajectory of where we're going right now. Right now, we're just like on this upward path of things getting more and more expensive. We can bend that curve if we choose to. Are we ever going to come down? Probably not, you know, and that's just something we have to think about. But that's where we are also really want to focus on attracting good employers, so that we're able to have more jobs that pay livable wages, because we just have a huge gap right now in service and high paying jobs, not a lot in the middle.
And one of the things I've learned over the last year doing interviews like this is that in previous decades, major influxes came when some of those employers planted themselves here. Now, someone just told me a story about, I mean, it's a different city, but it's Northern Colorado, like Kodak in Windsor, like the old photography. Like I didn't even know. I mean, it's been a while since I had heard that, just because everything's so digital now and everyone's got, you know, camera on their phone. But they were talking about the influx of jobs and families that moved to Windsor because of Kodak.
Yep.
You know, you drive down Harmony and just the tech road there, just so many, and then Woodward expanding and growing. When someone lands in your city like that, it has a way of not just impacting the person they hire, but restaurants and schools, like you had mentioned, and really a whole family unit. If you can get that above average paying job that helps you land here and build a life.
Yeah, it does make a difference. And, you know, I think the city is, we are talking about moving towards some sort of attraction. Fort Collins typically has not done business attraction. We haven't really needed to.
Yeah.
But then we didn't for a long time.
You had excellent world-class amenities.
Exactly. But now we're so expensive and it's so difficult to build here that people are going elsewhere. It's cheaper to go to Loveland or Timnath, Windsor, you know, go to Greeley and they'll pay you to move there, basically. So, you know, Fort Collins does have to think about, well, if we want to remain competitive, we're going to have to think about some sort of attraction. And a lot of that can be thoughtful and done in a way that's Fort Collins. You know, we can think about, well, you know, with things like when Woodward expanded, we really thought about, well, how many jobs are you bringing people in, or how many people are you going to hire locally? And so we have done kind of an approach where we work with you based on how many people you actually hire locally instead of bringing people in, right? Because we want to create jobs for people who are here. Doesn't mean we're saying no to people who want to move here.
Sure.
But we don't want to just import people and just compound the problem. So there are thoughtful ways that we can talk about how we're doing business attraction.
Yeah. All that's super interesting to me. I'm excited to like keep watching and keep learning the way you guys are trying to tackle some of those. Still talking about employment, still talking about affordability, but switching sectors a little bit because I'm a nonprofit leader and nonprofit, you know, there's a ton of nonprofits in Fort Hall. I've been amazed at how many nonprofits, and many of them are doing well because this community is wildly generous and so many people have skin in the game. They want the community to remain great. And so they, I think it's fantastic, the amount of volunteerism, but also the amount of like financial generosity people display to the nonprofits. But as the city grows and changes, the complexities get added, that nonprofit sector needs to be able to continue to thrive here too. And I'm sure you know this. I'm not sure. I would imagine everyone can assume this, but nonprofit affordability is also quite challenging. I mean, there's still money going in and money going out, but the affordability of even those nonprofit leaders, salaries, wages, benefits, things like that, that's quite a bit of challenge. But there's got to be a great balance between like the corporate entities that are hiring lots of people and the nonprofit agencies that are supporting the entire community as a whole. That one's just near and dear to my heart because that's the sector I'm in. And it's also something that I've just loved about our city and just learning so much about that. I'm curious, as you are in now this role, not only just the council role, but the role that you currently have as mayor, how do you see kind of that nonprofit sector and the city, or the nonprofit sector and the for-profit sector kind of working together currently, or ways you hope that they would work together more in the future?
We need all of them together, you know, because all of them fill a different place in the city. I worked for nonprofits for years and they have such a value to our community. They can be able to be so responsive and be able to fill in voids that, you know, the government or the private sector can't do. I think for the future of Fort Collins, I think we have to get a little bit smarter about how nonprofits are working together, because there is such a so much competitiveness between nonprofits for funding and for donor dollars. And, you know, at some point there's going to be a limit to those dollars, especially like if we're seeing economic downturns and then what happens to that. So I think the better we can get.
Yeah, it's really funny because if economic downturns happen, there's less financial generosity taking place, but likely a greater need.
Right. But so if nonprofits were, say you streamline nonprofits or they're better working together, would they be operating on such razor thin margins that they couldn't weather storms, economic ups and downs like that, right? And so, you know, I used to work for a nonprofit leader and she always said, as a nonprofit, it should be your job to work yourself out of a job. That is the day that you know you truly succeeded, when there is no longer a need for you. And I just think we have to work towards that of like, what if we're working towards this place where we didn't need all these nonprofits, or we didn't need, you know, and I always worked in human services, so it's different probably than your nonprofit, but, you know, working yourself out of this, that like, can we get to a place, probably not, but, you know, can we get to a place where we have reduced need? And that's like, where I think we're trying to go. But I think there's always going to be a place for those nonprofits, but we have to get better at working together on these issues, because right now it feels very siloed.
Siloed, yeah.
And if we really want to address some of these big issues or just these conversations and complex things we're working on for Collins, those three sectors have to come together better.
Yeah. Yeah. One last question. Navigate, two jobs, being a public, and just all the different things that we've talked about. How would you maybe define success for your role, and particularly as mayor, but also just as a female leader in our community, trying to kind of create ways for us to advance and thrive as a community? How are you going to look back at the end of this tenure and be like, man, I feel great about this or that? Or how might you define success, and how are you kind of working towards that?
Well, it's a great question.
Thank you. I ask questions for a living.
I still don't have an answer to this.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you're like 2 weeks into the job, so I get it.
But. Yeah. I was just talking to my therapist about this the other day, of just being like, you know, with council, I got to a place where there's so many different ways and so many expectations about what is being a good council member mean, or what does a good mayor mean? And it's different to everyone, right? How often do you answer my email? How often do you call me back? You know, how quickly, you know, like all these things. How much do you show up? Do you go to this thing? And for
you
me,
you went to their thing, but you didn't go to my thing.
Right, right. Or you didn't answer my email, or you didn't, you know. There's just so many expectations that you have to, for me, really internally look at. What does it mean to me? What can I do at the end to be like, I did that well? And for a council member, you know, it was really just going back to my values of like, why did I run? And what did I want to bring into this? And this to me was representing people who don't have the privilege to show up at City Hall, who want to elect someone because they ran on values of things like affordability and equity and representation, that they feel like that's my person. And I know at City Hall, they're going to represent me and I don't have to show up. Right. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to represent so that people knew someone up there was fighting for the things that they cared about. As mayor, it's similar, but it's different. And I think that since I've only been here 2 weeks, I have to figure out what that difference is and how that's going to look. But at the end of the day, I have always entered in public service with the idea that I want to show up and run on the values that I led with. Affordability. Making sure that people who want to stay in Fort Collins can stay in Fort Collins. Making sure that people have a good quality of life. And that's not just what the city provides, but that they are able to provide for their families. They feel secure in their homes. That they have whatever it is that means to them. And so that's what I take in here. And I think that it's easier said than done to remember those things. But I've always ran on the notion that I'm going to show up and do those things. And if I don't get elected again, that's okay. Because I really enter into public service with thinking that I'm not here to get reelected. I'm here to show up and do the things that I promised. And that might not make people happy. And that's okay, because I'm still going to run on these values that I wanted to.
Well, that integrity could go a long way.
Yeah.
In public office and in service, for sure. And I don't know that people always realize, because you said something that really caught my attention. Well, a couple of things, but one of them was, I want to be a voice for people who can't maybe show up to mm-hmm. these meetings. And I think sometimes, not always, but mm-hmm. I think sometimes people are like, what do you mean they can't show up? Sure, they can show up. Mm-hmm. Like, this is when the meeting is. It's Tuesdays in this room. And that's not how everyone's life works.
No.
You know, going back to my single mom, like the family, no way she's going to a meeting. Mm-hmm. No way. She's working nonstop. After she's done working, she's driving to nonprofits to get the care that she needs while, you know, my brother's in the backseat, newborn, like crying. There's no way.
Yeah.
Someone has to be her voice.
Yeah. Maybe you don't feel comfortable going to City Hall. Yeah. Maybe you don't feel like it's a place for you. Maybe you don't want to go public speak. Maybe you just feel like, I don't even know what you talk about. I don't know the protocol. It's just another thing for somebody to have to do.
There's no onboarding process for council members. There's no onboarding process for folks to go to those meetings either. No. So the other thing that I love, and I just want to reflect this back to you, and I think this would just be a great thing if it just stayed close to your heart, is those values-based, mm-hmm. you know, leadership decisions.
Yep.
That's, I feel like, I mean, that was just music to my ears when I heard you say that. You're just going to be pulled in so many different directions. You already are. Mm-hmm. But those values-driven decisions, that's just the way to go.
Yeah.
It is the way to go. And it takes self-awareness. You got to be able to articulate it. You got to be able to represent the community. But, man, there's so many, I'll put it in a positive. There's just not very many better ways to make decisions than values-based.
Yeah, I mean, it's helped me be able to guide myself through some really hard things on council. Mm-hmm. And people being really upset, right? And it's really hard when people are really upset with you to want to try and, okay, well, how are we going to do this? Or, you know, and it's like, no, at the end of the day, I'm showing up because this is what I said I wanted to do.
Yep.
And this is how I said I was going to lead. And so it's just like repeatedly coming back to that and sticking with, why am I here? What did I say I was going to do? And how did I say I was going to show up?
Yeah. Well, may you continue in that. May we all continue in that, honestly. because that is the way to be able to sleep at night confidently and with integrity and say, yeah, gosh, that's sometimes the price of leadership means people are grumpy.
Yep. To caring loudly.
They're caring very loudly.
Very loudly. Yep.
But this is who I am. Yep. And these are the things that we stand for because it's what we want our community to be about.
Yeah. And those people who are upset, they care so much about Fort Collins and they just have a different view of how we should proceed.
Yeah.
And that's great. They care so much about Fort Collins as well.
Well, that discontentment may lead them to throw their name in the ring
someday.
They can try to jump in.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for your time.
Of course.
I mean, this has been a great conversation. I feel like I learned a lot about you and just your journey here, but excited as ever for our city. And I'm grateful that we've got fantastic leaders who are trying to live as best they can with integrity and values-driven decisions to make this place or continue to have this place just be a wonderful place to live and help our community in general. So thank you again. And we wish you all the best of luck and leadership. And may you just enjoy the sourdough in your introverted time after all those events.
Exactly. Just the quietness of the bread.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
Thank you. And thank you for your interest.
Thanks for listening to the Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.